Chapter 11. Prisoners. Strelsky read the copy of the handwritten fax given to him by someone in the CIA who wanted to help Operation Limpet. Still angry with the British after Apostol's death, Strelsky drank a whole bottle of beer. Then he went to the Miami office and gave the fax to Burr. Important. From Sir Anthony Bradshaw to Richard Roper. Dear Richard, about our conversation 2 days ago, this is to let you know that Dr. Paul Apostol was talking to unfriendly people. They used him to report bad news about Major Corcoran so that you would get a new signer. I hope you will do something about this information quickly. Please send my money through the usual bank. Best wishes, Anthony. Jed and Corcoran left Crystal Island together and flew to Miami. It was the first time in months that Jed had not flown in a private plane, and at first she was excited. "I'm back in ordinary life," she joked to Corcoran, but he just made an angry face. He was angry because Roper had chosen Jonathan to go to Curaçao and not him. But now Roper wanted him again. Corcoran was rude to Jed again at Miami Airport and kept her passport in his pocket. She was hurt because he had never been like this with her before. While they were waiting for the flight to Antigua, two large blonde men came and stood with them.
"Who are they, Corky?" she asked.
"Friends of the boss, actually," he replied coldly. "They're coming with us."
And then she saw his eyes and felt scared because she knew they were extra bodyguards, and this was a Corcoran she did not know. Jonathan was a prisoner now too, but perhaps he had always been one since he had arrived on Crystal Island. He first realized that things had changed when Roper and his group were back at the airfield on Cerro Fabrega. The other guests had already left. Langbourne and Moranti were getting on to Roper's plane while Roper was saying goodbye to Colonel Fernandez. Suddenly, a boy ran up to Roper with a piece of paper. Roper read it, and Jonathan saw an angry look come into his face. Then Roper called Frisky over and whispered something to him. Frisky took Jonathan's arm and led him onto the plane. He told him to take the seat next to him.
"I've got a bad stomach, actually, Frisky," said Jonathan. "I need to be near the toilet."
"You'll sit where you're told," said Frisky.
So Jonathan had to sit between him and Tabby. And when he went to the toilet, Tabby waited outside. Roper sat alone at the front and spoke to no one, except to say thank you for a fax that Jonathan could see was handwritten. Roper read it and put it in his pocket. Then he stared ahead. When they got to Colon Airport in Panama, Jonathan was ordered to sit in the second car between Tabby and Frisky. It was driven by a small Panamanian man who wore a black suit.
"I'll need the toilet again soon," Jonathan said to Tabby.
"You'll need to be quiet," Tabby threatened.
Roper's car drove in front and led them to a beach with tall houses and high gates. Container ships sailed on the water. They drove to a huge building with a picture of a flying bird above the door. The two cars stopped and they all went inside.
"I really need to use the toilet again," Jonathan told Tabby.
"Well, hurry up then," said Tabby angrily.
They found a toilet and Tabby and Frisky waited outside. Inside the toilet, Jonathan quickly wrote a note about the building with a bird above the door and put it in an envelope. Afterwards, they followed the others through an office and through another door, which closed behind them. In front of them stood thousands of boxes. Langbourne pointed at one of the boxes, and a boy pulled it out and opened it for him. Roper nodded. About another 30 boxes were opened, and then Jonathan signed for 50 tons of Colombian coffee beans. When they had finished, Roper's group returned to their cars and drove off. But after a few minutes, Jonathan asked to stop at a gas station.
"Not again," said Tabby. "Go with him, Frisky," Roper called from the first car. "Wait outside the toilet."
Jonathan sat on the toilet and wrote down the numbers of the boxes that he could remember. He added this note to the envelope. A few hours later, a small Panamanian man in a black suit entered the bar in Panama City where Rook sat and gave him two envelopes.
"I found these on the floor of my car," the man explained. "Inside one envelope, there was a note for me and some money. The note said that if I brought the other envelope here, I would get $500.
Rook opened the first envelope and saw Jonathan's handwritten note in Spanish to the driver. He opened the second envelope and saw Jonathan's list of numbers. Rook smiled and gave the man $500. When Burr arrived back in London at 8 a.m., he was still wearing his Miami clothes. Goodhue was waiting for him at the airport.
"Any news of Roper's plane?" asked Burr. "Have they found it yet?"
"British intelligence tell me nothing," replied Goodhue.
"That's twice that my agents have lost that plane in 2 days. I don't believe it's a mistake," said Burr. "My source was on it. So were Roper and Langbourne. British intelligence and the CIA have radar everywhere. How can they lose a 13-seat plane?"
"They don't tell me anything, Leonard," replied Goodhue. "They keep me busy and call me the boss of intelligence, but I learn nothing. It's flagship again. We're not allowed to know. Where's Rook?"
"He's arriving in London soon," replied Burr.
They waited for a taxi.
"Jonathan writes that the arms are on a ship called the Lombardy," said Burr. "The cartels are mostly buying American arms with a bit of British as well. Roper is training people to use them and showing them to his customers at Cerro Fabrica. He also writes that there are American men in soldiers' uniforms who are doing the training. Rook thinks that they're CIA. And the drugs are on a ship called the Horacio Enriquez, sailing from Panama to Gdansk in Poland."
They were in the taxi now. Goodhue stared out of the window.
"Think about what you can and can't do, Leonard," he said. "You've got a ship full of arms going to Colombia and a boat full of drugs going to Poland. You have a crook to catch and a source to save. Don't let Darker and the others stop you from doing that. That's what I did. I was too busy looking at Darker and the list of Roper's friends and the banks and Darker again. Forget all that. You can't touch them. Stay with what is possible."